Apple's new iPad. If you're a pilot, you may want to pick one up. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, also of Bob Miller Flight Training at the Lancaster Buffalo Airport in Western New York. And we're here usually on Mondays to talk about safety issues. Today we're going to deviate from that a little bit and talk about some cockpit technology. But first, Bob, welcome in and tell us what's happening with Over the Airwaves the next couple of months.
Well, Paul, Over the Airways, as you know, has been with us for about 7 years, and it's been a true labor of love on my part. I really relish preparing that every month. In fact, we used to put it out every 2 weeks. But the reality of the summertime activities and the flight school that is growing beyond any expectation, I've just flat out run out of time, at least in the summer months. So I've decided to take a two-month hiatus to hold off or not to do a July or August edition, and plan to resume preparing Over the Airways this September. We'll be putting out announcements through our mailing list with a link to our archived pages so that they can get to 7 years of back issues. 7 years times 12, that's almost 84 issues of Over the Airways if somebody were inclined to go back and read them during the summer months. So it was a kind of a disappointing decision on my part, but the reality is I just had to do it.
Well, and for the first 4 years, I remember it was called Over the Airwaves, the biweekly journal for the proficient pilot, so there's probably over 100 of those things. Well, Bob, what role do you think Over the Airwaves has had in the growth of your flight school, and where does your flight school go from here?
Well, it clearly has made my name a little bit more recognized outside of the Buffalo area. We have about 15 to 17,000 estimated readers on Over the Airwaves. And from that list, I have any number of invitations to do advanced training, our New York City trips, our mountain flying trips. And that has helped too. But right now, frankly, we just don't have I don't have time to do those trips given the press of our growing flight school at Lancaster.
Now, your flight school has benefited from Over the Airwaves, but you had a lot of other things going on, too. And I got to tell you, it's not too many flight school operators in the current economy who can say, I'm going to have to cut back on something because I'm just getting too busy. What are some of the other things other than the newsletter that you attribute this success to?
Well, I do a fair amount of writing in the journals. I do some writing for IFR Magazine. I've done writings for other publications. My work with AeroNews.net over the last several years has been a big boost to the flight school, frankly. We're getting Over the Airways, and then to some extent to the flight school as well. The name recognition through your listeners, Paul, has been a great asset to what it is I've been doing.
What about the philosophy behind the flight school? I mean, you have not hung a green learn to fly sign on the fence and waited for people to come in the door. It seems to me that there are still a lot of things that people could take from your situation, your experience, and apply to their businesses elsewhere in the country.
Well, in my situation, I had a bit of an advantage. Most flight schools are operated or begun by flight instructors. I began my flight school as an experienced business entrepreneur. I have developed successful businesses unrelated to aviation out over the last 35 years. And so I brought a strong business perspective to the operation of the flight school. Business became the business of the flight school, not teaching people how to fly. Teaching people how to fly was the product that we were delivering. But I spent a lot of attention to cash management, to keeping our operating overheads minimal, doing extensive advertising, all of the things that I've learned over the years that make small businesses successful. The same thing happened in hospitals over the last 50 years. Hospitals, as you may know, used to be managed by physicians. Today, hospitals are managed by trained professional administrators. Today, flight schools, to a large extent, are administered by flight instructors. Great flying skills, not necessarily the strongest business skills. So if you can bring in an individual or acquire those skills, those business skills, teaching an individual how to fly becomes a whole lot less challenging than managing cash flow in a weak economy over the next 30 to 60 days.
You touched on something there a sentence or two ago, and I want to come back to it too. And you talked about flight instructors having great flight skills, but not necessarily being businessmen. They're also not always great teachers. When I talk to people who have gone through your flight school, they talk about that. Beyond just passing the fundamentals of instruction, you have to have something going for you in terms of knowing how to work with people.
Strong interpersonal skills are without a doubt the greatest asset a flight instructor can bring to the table. When we hire flight instructors, I'm not so concerned about what I see in their logbooks as I am the way they just animate with me across the table. There is no closer relationship between two people professionally than there is between a flight instructor and a student sitting 2 inches apart in a tightly constrained cabin or cockpit for any number of hours. That relationship has got to be a sound, effective, strong working relationship. And that takes a bit of refinement, a bit of I don't want to say class, but it takes a bit of culture, if you will, to be sensitive to the different kinds of personality types that we have in the cockpit. So that's the greatest challenge we have as a flight instructor, I believe, aside from the business side of the operation. Let's keep in mind, too, that at current estimates, less than half of all of the students who sign up for flight instruction ever make it to check ride. A large percentage of those students do not make it to check ride because, in my opinion, because of ineptness on the part of the flight instructor. And that's one of the sad aspects of our profession.
Or flight instructors, sometimes 3, 4, 5 in the course of getting your 40 hours of instruction in for the private.
Yes. One of the things that we've done at Bob Miller Flight Training is we have almost doubled the pay rate for our flight instructors. Rather than paying flight instructors $17 or $18 an hour, we're twice that. But I'm only interested in career-oriented flight instructors. And we have a couple right now, young men who see the benefit of what they're doing. They're making more money right now at the age of 24 than a new captain on board a regional airline. So they're happy. They're home every night. And most importantly, we're not getting the turnover. They're staying with us. And that from a student's perspective, is like gold.
Well, back to how this conversation started, when do we look forward to the return of a regular schedule for Over the Airwaves? This fall?
Yeah, I'm hoping to get the next issue out in September, and then we'll continue throughout the year as we have been doing in the past. It's not just us. Summertime is the peak season in North America for flight instruction, and we're peaked out right now. For me, it's a 6.5-day work week. So there's pressures on the family, and then to come home and then spend no small amount of time putting out Over the Airwaves in what limited time is left, it just did not compute.
All right. When we come back from the break, Bob, we want to talk about the iPad a little bit. I know you've had one and had the chance to play with it and seen what it can do for pilots, and we'll talk about that. Bob Miller is my guest. More in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from AeroNews.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près de moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the AeroNews special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves and Bob Miller Flight Training. Here to talk a little bit about Apple's iPad. Bob, I know a lot of people have been excited. We've seen coverage on TV news of people standing in line to get these things when they came on the market. And you have discovered that it may be becoming an indispensable item for pilots as well. Tell us why.
I was curious with the iPad because I've long been curious about the electronic flight bag, and I never went that route. I'm a strong PC user. I'm not an Apple aficionado. But when the iPad came along, I saw what some of the software for aviation was doing to my iPod. The iPod, using WingX software, using 4Flight software, was a great enhancement for filing flight plans and getting some weather information digitally. But when I saw those software pieces work on an iPad, where we have a large, you know, I don't know the dimensions, 6 by 7 inch screen, and the moving map features and the weather features and the brightness of the screen, I decided to purchase one and try it on a couple of longer cross-country trips. And after those trips, I came back concluding that this, in my opinion, may be the most significant cockpit advance for general aviation pilots since GPS, primarily for its safety implications.
Let's talk about those safety implications, because this is not an approved device, and so we have to be a little careful where we go with this and how much we rely on it. But what can it do for a pilot on a cross-country trip like you were talking about?
I took a trip from Buffalo to Hyannis, about a two-hour flight, and then a trip the following week down to Cape May, New Jersey from Buffalo, another two-hour flight in my 210. And I was strong. It was good VFR conditions, but I filed an IFR flight plan. Primarily, I wanted to see what the iPad could realistically do for me. Using the 4Flight software, I was able to bring up a sectional chart, low altitude and route chart, and a high altitude and route chart with the airplane, an image of an airplane geo-referenced along that chart, so I could see my airplane moving along both of those, any of those three different charts. From a safety perspective, I concluded that, man, if I had to descend immediately and find a safe landing area due to an engine failure, assuming I was in IMC conditions, I could track myself right down to any roadway that was printed on a sectional. That's how accurate it appeared to be. So that factor alone, I thought, was tremendously significant. There are other benefits, too. You know, FAR 91-103 requires us to have all available information concerning our flight. There is no information that I cannot find in a properly operated iPad that I could not otherwise find visiting a flight service station. It is all there. The question is to whether or not we back it up with paper charts and plates. That's another question altogether. But having all available information at hand, being able to arrive at an airport, pull up all of their approach plates, approach procedures, departure procedures, knowing they're also always current, gave me the assurance that in a pinch I had all of the information I needed. So I think this is something that's going to really take our industry by storm. Once people see this, people that I've shared it with have been impressed beyond belief. And what do? They go out and spend $600 or $800 and they get one. They load up the software. Paul, Jeppesen charges us $300 to $500 for a year's worth of subscription for all the approach plates in the United States. 4Flight charges $75, just $75 for that same subscription for the entire country. It's amazing. I don't know how they do it. I don't know what Jeppesen's response is going to be to this, but it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
You know, people talk about, can I rely on it? But if you get into a pinch and you have to find chart information, having paper charts can be a nightmare. You know, a lot of the flying I do is in very small aircraft. Some of them open aircraft, and you can't just reach in the back and pull something out and put it on your knee, and even if you could, you might not have time. How is the iPad when it comes down to finding something quickly?
Very good question, Paul. You're right. You particularly using the NACO charts, the en route charts that are much larger than the Jeppesen charts. When ATC gives you an amendment to a routing, particularly here in the East, they'll take a direct routing and add 5 or 6 fixes on it, and you need to copy these fixes, number one, down that they give to you. Then you need to plot them on your GPS, and unless they're spelling out all of the fixes, you're now spreading 2, sometimes 3 sheets of en route charts around in fine print in a jostling airplane with wind blowing through the cockpit. It's at night, it can be a nightmare, as you say. But on the iPad, all you have to do is lay out the low altitude en route chart, and with your thumb and forefinger, you can squeeze that chart to any size, you can blow it up, bring it down, and you can find those fixes very, very quickly. And the nice thing about the charts is they're all knitted together, so that on a long flight where you may be going through, you know, one chart to the next chart to the next chart and then flipping over, These are all stitched together, so you can just smoothly pull the entire nation of charts across your screen. It's remarkable.
I have to wonder what we'll see in another 10 years, given how fast things have moved now. Well, Bob, as always, we appreciate the chance to check in and talk to you. We will miss over the airwaves for a few weeks, but we're probably all pretty busy anyway. But we'll look forward to its return in September. And thanks for taking some time for our listeners today.
My pleasure, Paul, as always.
You can find an archive of back issues of Bob's newsletter at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.